This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air, Linda Cohen along with you. Well, actor Michael Douglas made headlines recently after telling a British paper, The Guardian, that his throat cancer may have been caused by the human papillomavirus transmitted through oral sex. Well, this sensational revelation sent a shockwave around the world. But what exactly is the truth? Is there a link between HPV and oral sex? And if so, what do we need to know about this? Well, here with me with some answers is Dr. Joseph Domokowski, professor of pediatrics and an infectious disease specialist at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Domokowski. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Linda. You're welcome.
So tell us, is there a link between oral sex and HPV?
There is a link between oral sex and having HPV and HPV-related oral cancers, yes.
Well, exactly. Before we go on and you'll kind of elucidate more on the relationship, help us understand what is HPV or the human papillomavirus.
Yep.
How prevalent is it? Are there more than one type?
Humans are exposed to human papillomaviruses every day, all the time. There are over 100 different types. Half of them cause skin infections, common warts, plantar warts, those kinds of things. The other half can cause infections of mucous membranes of the oral and respiratory tract, and mucous membranes of the genital tract.
And does that then necessarily go on to a cancer of those same areas?
Thankfully not. Most HPV infections are cleared spontaneously by our own immune system. But because it's such a common infection, even a rare instance of developing malignant cells or cancerous cells does happen in some individuals.
So some of those strains can be responsible actually for causing cancer?
Yeah, among the HPV types that infect the genital tract, there are over 20 of them that are known to cause cancer changes.
So you say it's common. I had read a staggering quote of 79 million Americans are currently infected with HPV.
The number doesn't surprise me at all. There are at least 1 million new cases of genital warts every year.
And that's what you're saying. Again, the responsible actor there is the HPV virus.
Exactly.
HPV, which is a virus. Anyway, so how do you know if you have it?
Well, most infections are completely without symptoms, completely asymptomatic. Women find out that they may have HPV infection because they go for their routine gynecologic care and they find out they have an abnormal pap smear. Many of those abnormal smears are caused by HPV virus types.
But how then would we know or be prepared to protect ourselves against the ones that could go on to cause a cancer, whether it be a cervical cancer, which I know has been in the news most aggressively, and in this case, oral cancers?
Well, we're not going to know if we are currently infected or actively infected unless we develop specific symptoms like genital warts or abnormal findings on a pap smear. There aren't routinely available tests to be done.
So no blood tests, no serologic things that we could look toward?
Nothing. No. There are some gynecologic tests that can be done to determine whether or not an abnormal pap smear is caused by HPV and whether it's a low-risk HPV or a high-risk HPV, high-risk meaning potential for developing cancer.
So that's more hopeful. So in other words, there's a way of analyzing which type of HPV you might have.
Or which group of HPV. Is it low-risk or high-risk? Yes.
Okay. So in other words, you're able to then determine if you might be a candidate to go on and develop some kind of a cancer.
Correct. But the gynecologist knows which tests need to be done and how to look at the cervix to see if there's pre-malignant areas that would need to have specific treatments.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Joseph Domokowski, and we're talking about HPV, the human papillomavirus, and its relationship to cancer. So I also read an incredibly staggering statistic that approximately 42,000 people in the United States will be newly diagnosed with oral cancer in 2013, and that includes neck, mouth, throat cancers, and that some of those are obviously, or a large number of those, or some degree of those, are due to the HPV virus.
Yeah, we've learned, especially this HPV type 16, it tends to be the nastiest of the bunch. This virus not only causes cervical cancer, vaginal cancer, vulvar cancer, penile cancer, anal cancer, but it can also cause cancer of the oral pharynx, especially at the base of the tongue.
So if you don't know that you have it and you're sexually active, what's the recommendation? What do you do?
Safe sex, it's the same story. You know, practice safe sex, monogamous sex, and if you're not monogamous, be very careful about who you're having sex with and how you're doing that.
So use condoms, for example.
Yes.
The same way you're talking
dental
about HIV.
Dental condoms, exactly. Protect yourselves. HPV is not the only sexually transmitted infection that's dangerous. So there are a lot of reasons to practice careful sex.
So what are the recommendations currently? I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk and a lot of controversy around some of these recommendations. What are the recommendations within the pediatric community in terms of the new vaccine that's come out, the Gardasil, or there may be other versions?
Yeah, there are two licensed HPV vaccines in the United States. One of them includes two HPV types, 16 and 18. Those are cancer-causing types. The other includes both 16 and 18 as well, but also two additional types that prevent genital warts, 6 and 11. So currently, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices tells pediatricians we should be vaccinating all children with a three-dose series starting at age 11.
Wow. And that's boys and girls.
Boys and girls.
What's the rationale there in terms of both sexes?
Well, if you think about a sexually transmitted infection, it doesn't make sense to identify half of the potential individuals that are at risk and protect them. Now, obviously, 11-year-olds aren't at risk for sexually transmitted infections yet, but the goal is to protect them before they're exposed to HPV because, again, teenagers aren't going to tell us when they're going to start having sex, and we want to make sure they're protected before they engage in sexual activity.
And isn't there something about the efficacy of the vaccine being pretty much only effective if you have never been exposed to those types of HPV viruses? Could it help you if after you have been exposed?
It's not a treatment vaccine. In other words, if you already have that specific type of HPV, it doesn't do anything to help prevent the complications of that infection. But remember, one of the vaccines includes four different types, and it's very unlikely that any teenager has already been infected with all four types. So even if they've already had one of the four types, you still have an opportunity to protect them against the other three.
So the basic concept here, though, is you really want to catch it before you've been exposed.
Perfect, yes. Vaccinate them before they're ever have the potential to be exposed.
And the major thrust here then is prevention rather than treatment.
Exactly. There currently isn't a treatment as far as antivirals or vaccines for HPV-related malignancy. We have to treat those cancers as cancers with anti-cancer drugs.
So they would be either chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, the whole
exactly.
gamut of what you would do with any kind of a cancer.
Correct.
So this is kind of a far-out question, but they're recommending what ages, 11 to what age?
The current recommendations for females go 11 to 26 years old,
okay,
all of them. We can start vaccinating as early as 9 years of age because there's good safety data down to as young as 9 years of age. For boys and young men, we start vaccinating, again, at 11 years of age up to age 21, and for higher-risk males between the ages of 22 and 26 routinely.
Would you ever, I mean, this is kind of a far-out question, as I said, but there's that kind of proverbial 40-year-old virgin.
Mm-hmm.
If someone has not been actively engaged in sex or they've only been involved in protected sex, would you recommend some adults being vaccinated?
There are obvious candidates for vaccine outside of the FDA labeling indications. For example, you have a woman that's been in a monogamous relationship. She gets divorced and she starts a new relationship. She may think, you know, I really want to be vaccinated against this, but now she's past the age of 26, not technically a candidate. We can use this vaccine off-label. There are good safety data up to age 45, but when the FDA looked at the efficacy information in individuals from 27 to 45, it wasn't as clear, it didn't work clearly.
So it didn't warrant on a public health basis to make that part of the recommendation.
For everyone, exactly.
Right. But it can be effective to some degree, or the hope is that it could still be effective.
And someone that hasn't previously been exposed to all those four types, just because of their age and their activity, the potential is there.
So prevention basically is what we're looking for the HPV vaccine, but what is currently happening in New York State in terms of the vaccination? I mean, I know that there's been controversy during one of the prior primary, I think it was one of the candidates in the Republican primary was saying that you were forcing our children, young children, adolescents, to be vaccinated against a sexually transmitted disease, suggesting that in some ways it would increase promiscuity.
Yeah,
Are you running into that kind of problem?
Well, it's interesting to hear this from either parents or from politicians, but evidence-based medicine, looking at surveys, doesn't support that notion. When we go out and ask parents or ask older teenagers, why are you getting this vaccine or why are you not getting this vaccine, none of them tell us it's because they're going to avoid getting the vaccine because they don't want to become more promiscuous.
So it doesn't hold true, in fact, in your experience.
No, just think about the mind of a teenager. If they're going to go out and have sex, they're not going to say, I'm not going to have sex because I'm not vaccinated, or
right.
I'm going to get vaccinated because I'm going to go.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
I think they don't connect to those two things directly.
So what do you think the vaccination rates are here in Central New York?
Yeah, our vaccination rates are about a third for fully vaccinated for girls. We're only at about 10 to 12% for boys, but that's a newer recommendation. There's a lot of potential for improvement there.
Yeah. So we hope that people will take it seriously because it will prevent them contracting something like women, cervical cancer, or women or men, oral cancer, and some of the others you've described.
And many other types of cancers, some of which we may not even know about yet.
Wow. Well, I hope that education is very crucial, probably both at home and in the schools, to get this kind of word out. But I appreciate so much your coming in and sharing this very important information with us and clearing up some of the myths. My guest has been Dr. Joseph Domokowski. He's professor of pediatrics and infectious disease at Upstate Medical University.